Yes, I felt like I'd been set up. Can you hear me? But that's okay. It's all a bit of fun. Not just fun. And so this morning, actually, I'm really glad to be here, and it's really exciting to come and talk about it, because I know that you all love Story Sunday, because it's an opportunity to connect with that inner child within. And so I'm going to ask you to do that, to connect with that inner child, and enjoy. After yesterday, listening to Conrad Kemp talking about stories and how they give us a bigger and different perspective of things, I thought, well, that's great. We can do that this morning. We can come with a childlike wonder and listen to maybe some familiar things and get a bigger perspective and listen out to what God might be saying through it. And so this morning, I'm going to talk about two different stories. And the idea is that we want to see things the way that God sees things. We want to see the bigger picture. We want to see, well, the title is Bringing the Invisible to Visible. So you get the idea of the theme. And the first story is going to be about a famous person who is brave and clever and does a lot of rescuing people and also time travels. So who do you think that might be? Yeah, Doctor Who, that's right. So we're going to start off by watching a little clip from Doctor Who. So if you can, you know, sit on the floor, move so that you can see it. And I'll just tell you what this clip's about, to give you a little bit of background. So Doctor Who is travelling with, well, actually, with Clara, his old assistant. I know he's got a new one now, a Missy. And what's happened is that Davros... Does anybody know who Davros is?
No. He's the baddie, isn't he?
He is a baddie. Yay. That's it. Somebody said it over there?
He's the creator of the Daleks.
He is the creator of the Daleks. So he is a real, real baddie. He's a real baddie. But he, incidentally, has got Doctor Who's sonic screwdriver. And so Davros sends one of his... spies, one of his minions called Saraph, to go and find Doctor Who and bring Doctor Who to see him. And so Saraph goes off and finds Doctor Who and tells Doctor Who that Davros is very ill and dying and that he must come and see him. And so Doctor Who, Clara and Missy are all transported to an outer space space station, which is a hospital station where the action is just about to begin. So let's hope this works and that we can see the right bits. And I might fast forward some of it.
Explain politely. Davros is my arch enemy. Why would I want to talk to him?
No, wait, hang on a minute. Davros is your arch enemy now?
Hush.
Davros
knows. Davros remembers.
That's yours.
It was.
What?
I don't have a screwdriver anymore.
Ooh. Never seen that before. Doctor, the look on your face. What is that? Shame. You're ashamed. Doctor. What have you done?
To get them transporting up to the space station.
Okay.
Sorry. Right, they're in the space station. That's it. They're transporting up to the space station now.
How scared must you be to seal every one of your own kind inside a tank? Davros made the Daleks. But who made Davros?
Okay, great. Coming up hyperspace?
So that's the hospital space station that they're going to.
What is that?
I don't know. A hospital?
We've been waiting.
Who knows? It's always the way with hospitals.
You will come. You will stay.
Fair enough. Doctor. You sent Missy your confession dial.
Well, we've known each other a long time. She's one of my own people.
My point is, we both saw her die on Earth ages ago. And obviously you knew that wasn't real, or worse. Hoped it wasn't. Either way, I think you've been lying.
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. Make it up to me. There, see? Now you have to come back. What's wrong with the gravity in here? No. Nothing. It's perfect. But this is a space station, so the gravity should be artificial, all coppery smelling around the edges, a tiny bit sexy. But this feels real, man. Like a planet. How can you and the Doctor be friends?
Why shouldn't we be?
You spend all your time fighting.
Exactly.
You know what this airlock is? I'll tell you. It's Pan.
What do you mean?
I mean that today might be the day.
What day?
The day I kill you.
What are you doing? Are you opening it?
Yeah, of course.
Missy, we'll get sucked out.
You and me together. Off we go. Let's make jam.
Well, we just need to fast forward. Back to Clara and Missy. Hold the thought. They were just opening the door.
It'll end tonight.
That's Davros, by the way.
It seems your friends have gone exploring.
It's warm, isn't it? For deep space, anyway. What are you doing?
Treading softly.
Oh, there's a floor.
No. No, there's ground. This is the ground. We're on a planet. And that is not a space station. That is a building. And the rest of the planet, the whole thing, is invisible.
That's ridiculous.
Well, yes, of course it is. I mean, how would you ever find your glasses or the little girl, Schumann? What if you kissed an ugly?
Unless when you're part of the atmosphere, you start sinking with the spectrum.
Why would anybody hide a whole planet?
I would rather depend on the planet, dear.
Okay, we can stop there. lots of different things in there. Right, so what do you think one of the things might be that's going on in that clip? There's lots of different things, obviously, but... Well, one of the... Well, what's happened is that they're in this space station and they think they're in outer space. But Clara is worried that, you know, she's going to die up there. And Missy and the doctor say, think about the gravity. The gravity is quite different what it should be like if they were in outer space. So Missy very bravely opens the airlock and they notice that they can breathe. And so they step out on what looks like space. And as they step out, they realise actually they're standing on the ground. And as they breathe in the atmosphere and synchronise with the atmosphere, they can see that actually they're on a planet. They're on a disused planet, which is actually the Daleks' homeland. So what they couldn't see is actually coming to be visible. There's lots of things going on in that episode, but that was the main thing, that they were stepping out, and what they couldn't see, they suddenly could see. And that's one of the things that would be good to think about, is how do we know something when we can't see it? So now, how do you know that you're loved? How do you know or see the wind that turns this windmill round? So, where's my removable microphone gone? All right, yes. So, yes, I'm going to get you all to think. Where's Annie? She's going to take this round. So, have any of you got any thoughts as to, think of something that's invisible. How do you know it's there? For example, how do you know that plants grow? Can you see electrons? Can you see electricity? Any thoughts?
You see change.
Pardon?
You see change. So you know plants grow because you can see change, and you know that the wind is blowing on that because you can see change.
So you can see the evidence of something.
Hmm.
You can see the evidence of something happening that's not visible. Can you say that?
You just see the impact of the invisible.
You see the impact of the invisible.
So it's the impact of the invisible on the visible. Hence, the windmill going round.
Yeah. Very good.
I think it's a bit like God, because you can't see him here, but you know that he's still here. And then if you carry on believing, then it may just be possible that eventually you actually see him.
Very good. I can have a windmill. Very good. Very good answer. Yeah. Anybody else got any thoughts?
Yeah. I was thinking about electrons.
Yeah.
From first-hand experience on several occasions, I can testify that you can feel electrons.
Right.
What?
Because if you grab a piece of wire, as I've done on a few occasions, that you thought didn't have electrons running through it, and it does, because you've switched the wrong switch off, or somebody else has switched it on when you switched it off to start with, then you feel the electrons. You can't see them, but you can feel them.
You can feel them. So it's the impact.
It would be nice to have a
room. Well, as the discussion goes on, to me, it begs the question whether anything really is invisible, because it's about perception, and you know, so seeing something is maybe you don't see it with the physical eye, but you can see something or perceive something like touch or smell or whatever. So actually, I question whether anything really is invisible.
Right, that's a good question. Good thought. It's good thought. Have you got any ideas?
No.
Now, how do you know that you're loved? You can think about it. You can have one. Sometimes you need a mic. Some things are very, very small, aren't they? Like atoms. And how do you see an atom or an electron? Sometimes you need a microscope, don't you, that sort of powers things up. And you can look down and you have an aid and you can see some very, very tiny things that are going on around us.
Can I say something about love?
Yes.
Because I can see that you're loved because you're sitting on your mummy's lap and she had her arms around you. And to me, it looks like you're very loved.
You can have a windmill.
Oh, I get a windmill.
You want mummy flowers? Yeah, you can have mummy flowers. Oh, yeah, she wants the pink one.
Nice colour. At least you got one.
Oh, sorry, Trevor. Yeah. Sorry. How do you know?
I know, like, I think how I know that I'm loved is because of the actions which other people make.
Yes, it's good. Good point.
I think it's just the, like we said earlier, it's the physical evidence of these things. Yeah. You know, you can see a plant growing, you can feel the wind blowing, and you can't see it, but you can see the evidence of it, and it's like love.
Yeah.
You feel the evidence of it. And it's not until you experience that, then you know that that is what love is.
That's a great answer. Would you like a windmill?
I'd love one. Thank you very much indeed.
I think it's past experience. So if you've put a seed in the ground, that little brown seed, and you put it in the ground, and then it grows and grows and then has a flower and dies, the next year you know that if you put the seed in the ground, then you're going to get a flower because of your past experience.
Yeah, great. Good answer. That's a good answer.
I'm trying.
I think going back to the extract that we've just looked at, there had to be some faith in the sense that, you know, who else would step out into an abyss? Because there's an almost bit of stupidity in that, you know, it's disaster. Unless you've got the past experience or the faith to know that there is something there. So, you know, it's stupidity or faith.
Great answer. Do you want a windmill?
Oh, thank you.
So that's a really good point, isn't it? Because, oh, sorry, Lawrence.
Humans are perhaps like radio receivers. So a radio receiver is a concrete thing, a real thing that is created to receive the invisible. And we are a real physical thing that is created to receive the invisible. So we, like the radio receiver, slightly our receiver is perhaps a little broken, but we definitely receive love. We know because we're built to receive it, both human and supernatural love from God. So because we have a receiver built into us like a radio.
Well, that's a wonderful illustration, isn't it? We're built to receive love. We're built to receive things we can't see. We know that the Holy Spirit is real, but we can't see him. But we know the impact of him in our life and going on around us. We know that faith is about the things that we can't see, the conviction of things hoped for, it says in Romans. Is it the evidence of things hoped for, the convictions of things can't see? And it's all about experience with faith and growing faith, isn't it? And so we're going to have another little story now to just help us kind of get a bit more of that idea. Did you want a windmill, Lauren?
Yeah, I'll have a windmill.
Would you like a rainbow one?
Yeah, rainbow is good.
So I need a little bit more help for this next story. I need some people to come and do some reading. So have we got anybody? Any maybe younger members who like to read, or even older members? No? Anybody? would you like to come? Would you like to come and read? Right. You're going to be the king, aren't you? Hold on to that microphone. What would you like? We're going to have a little story about Elisha now. Would you like to be Elisha? Or a soldier or a servant?
Soldier.
You're going to be a soldier. Right. Can be that one. And if you're a soldier, you can wear a soldier's hat. You don't have to wear it if you don't want to, but no. Would you like to be a soldier? You can be a servant, or you can be Elisha, or you can be another soldier. You'll be another soldier. Do you want to wear a hat? Yeah, go wear the hat. And there's your bit. And you have got a crown. You're the king. Would you like to read something? No. Any more volunteers to read? We need a Elisha. Elisha?
Do I get the beard or something?
No, you can have a very posh, you can have a posh robe.
Okay.
Yes, please. Yeah, you can be Elisha's servant.
Okay.
And you can have a sort of less posh kind of thing, because maybe they wore something like this in those days. Very good. Right. If you come and stand here now, do we need some more microphones, Tony?
Okay.
Right. So, Elisha. Brilliant. Fantastic. Elisha, you're just off stage at the moment with your servant. Can you just go and stand off stage for a moment? And, oh, I didn't, Elisha, his words. Elisha! Hear your words. Right. Okay. So, this is going to be a story about a prophet in the Old Testament. Now, in the Old Testament, if God wanted to talk to somebody, they would talk through people called prophets. So he might give them a vision or a dream or talk to him, and then the prophet would go and tell the people. Or if the people wanted to know what God was saying to them or what to do, they would ask the prophet, and he would go and ask God for them. We don't have to do that now because we've got Jesus, and we can talk to God directly. But that's another story. That is the role of the prophet. And in the Old Testament, there was a very well-known prophet called Elisha. And you don't have to look this up, because we are going to read out the extract from the Bible, but it's in 2 Kings 6, if you're interested. And this prophet, Elisha, had quite an exciting life and did lots of different things. But at this particular point in time, he was in a place called Dothan. I don't, it's somewhere. And there was a war going on, because there was lots of wars in Kings. And this was a place called Syria, I think, in those days. It was called Aram. And there was a king in Aram who was attacking the Israelites. And this king was a very important king. And this is our king of Aram here. And he was very, very worried, this king, and he'd summoned his top officers from the army to talk to him. So, king.
I can't believe it. This war is not going my way. I decided where the army would camp so we would attack the Israelites, and the Israelites didn't go there. They were on their guard because they knew where we were going. This has happened not just once, not twice, but many times. I am at my wits' end with all of this. How do the Israelites know what I am planning? Who is the mole? Who is the spy who is telling the king of Israel what I am planning? Which one of you is working for them and telling them my secrets?
Okay, so officer number one.
No, it's not any of us, my lord, the king.
Officer number
It is Elisha, the prophet, who tells the king of Israel what you are planning, even when you stay in your bedroom.
What? Unbelievable. I have got to do something about this. Go and find him so I can send my troops and capture him and put a stop to this.
So the king waits and worries while the troops go off and fight, see if you can find Elisha. Or not find him, but see if you can find out from your spies, people you know, where he might be. Ask Rydell, she might have an idea. So they go off and do some investigating. And then when they've asked around a bit, they come back. Okay, officers, you can come back now. Have you asked around a bit? Anybody know where Elisha is? Ask them. Anybody know where Elisha is? Okay. So actually, you've found out where he is, haven't you? So the king is so relieved to see you.
Get the whole army ready. The best.
Oh, hang on, we haven't applied, have we?
We know where he is. Elisha is in Dothan.
Get the whole army ready. The best fighting men, and send the chariots and horses to the night in the dark, and surround the city.
Off they go. So the king and the officers go off to plan their attack. Meanwhile, the next morning, early in Dothan, in Elisha's house, Elisha and the servant are asleep. Elisha's servant gets up very early to get the breakfast and do all the bits and pieces that he needs to do. And he looks out of the window.
Oh no, I can't believe it. Elisha, wake up, help. There is an army surrounding our whole city with horses and chariots. What should we do?
Aha! Do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Lord. I'm sure he wasn't that dramatic, but it kind of feels like it should be.
Yes.
Lord, I pray open his eyes so that he may see.
Oh, wow! I can see the mountain full of horses and chariots of fire all around us. We are saved!
Hey! Very good. You can come and take a bow, plet readers. That was brilliant. Thank you so much. They did so well. I love that story. Thank you. You can sit down now. That's brilliant. Thank you so much for wearing the helmet and doing everything. Thank you. Would you like a windmill? Choose a colour.
Can I have a blue one?
Oh, you, yeah. Blue one's gone. So I love that story because I think the story is actually more about the servant and how God cared so much for that servant. So Elisha knew that whatever the enemy could throw at him, whatever human army he was against, that actually God was stronger, that he could put his trust and his faith in the power of God rather than what he could see. But the servant was absolutely terrified. He looked out and thought, what's going to happen to us? And so Elisha prayed that the servant would see what was hidden from his sight, what was invisible. And so God opened his eyes to see the angelic army of fire that was around them and was protecting them and was going to keep them safe. And that's just so wonderful because God wanted to transform that servant's fear into faith. He wanted to help him because he cared about this ordinary servant. And I think that's just so lovely because God just cares about each one of us. He He cares about our fears. He cares about the circumstances that we're in. He cares about what we're facing. And he wants us to know that there's a great amount of spiritual activity going on around us that we can't see. It said in Psalm 34 that the angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and he rescues them. That God wants to rescue us. And that is just such a lovely thought, isn't it? When we think of that wonderful hymn, immortal, invisible, God only wise, in light inaccessible, hid from our eyes, that actually there's a lot hidden from our eyes that we can't see. But God actually wants to grow our faith, because it's with our faith that we can have an assurance of things that we can't see. And sometimes he does open our eyes that we can see what's invisible, but more often we use the eyes of our heart or our spiritual eyes or the eyes of faith to see and believe that the whole of God's resources in heaven are available to us. And so I think that's our prayer for today. Maybe something you'll take away is, you know, whatever circumstances you're facing, know that the resources of heaven are available to you, even if you can't see them. That scripture from Romans, which says, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see, which I said at the beginning. And so I hope you've had a bit of fun and enjoyed that, and I'm going to hand it back to Trevor.
Yeah, you're really good.